Greetings, listeners, if any, and welcome to DM Dad, the podcast about playing Dungeons & Dragons and other role-playing games with kids. A great way to spend time with your family, now that your friends are too old and have all moved away.
Hi Robert, Arfed here. Just wanted to call in and say I certainly enjoy your mediocre ramblings, if you want to call it that. I've always enjoyed your podcasts and just wanted to call in to give you a bit of support to make sure that you don't think that everyone feels the same way. Also wanted to say you might want to check out the ICRPG game system if you haven't. It's something that I'm running for our group at the moment, and the main focus is you have a difficulty level for the room or the encounter or the part of the adventure you're in, so everyone knows that there's a base number that they need to roll. If it's an easier attempt that they want to make, or they try and make the same attempt twice, it goes easier by 3. If it's a harder attempt, it goes up by 3. But worth checking out. I think you and the kids would enjoy it.
Thanks for that, Darren. Yeah, it's funny because I've noticed a few other anchorites have made reference to this this infamous comment about mediocre rambling. I guess because the comment in question didn't specify any particular OSR anchorites, we've kind of all as a unit, you know, taken it like as a slight against all of us. So I've heard, I'm sure I heard Tim Shorts mention it and Chuck Thorne as well. And I first heard about it on Spike Pit. So, but I think, you know, I think Darren's comment is exactly right. That's like, don't take this sort of thing to heart. It doesn't mean that all the listeners, agree, you know, the person who made the comment in question is just one person, and you know, none of us, I think, are out to please everybody, nor could we if we wanted to, because that's not really possible. And in on the back of this, you know, at the same time that following this comment being made, some of my episodes have broke 50 listens, which is like double what I used to pull. And, you know, I've got over 900 total listens. So I'm actually, you know, gaining an audience rather than like losing one. So yeah, you know, probably in the end it's, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion and we should probably just not take it too personally.
No, man, nothing is fucked here.
Nothing is fucked?
No, man.
The goddamn plane has crashed into the mountain.
No, man, come on.
Hello, Robert, it's Colin. Just calling in to say thanks for your continued support of Spike Pit with your call-ins. I'm always looking forward to hearing from you, and you've always got something really interesting to say. So I thought I'd return the compliment slightly. You've been talking about OD&D quite a lot and the origins of the game. I don't remember if you said anything about White Hack, whether you'd looked at White Hack at all. I've heard some good things about it. It's quite nicely produced and it's relatively affordable, but yeah, I don't recall you talking about it. Just wondered if you had any thoughts on it, if it was something you'd looked at or entertained looking at. I'm fully aware you've probably got plenty of clones at this point, but just something for consideration.
Thanks for that, Colin. You know, you would think that I have enough clones, but I find that it's one of these things that I think it's just like Pokemon. I got to collect them all. So I don't need much encouraging to check out yet another retro clone. Because the thing about them, I mean, some of them are really, really close to the original. And some of them provide some unique insights that the designer, you know, it's like, I use these things at the table, you might like them too, like some interesting house rules or an interesting twist. So on the back of Colin's message, I went ahead and ordered the White Hack because it is not in my collection to date. And if I'm not mistaken, it actually predates the Black Hack. I put it off ordering it because it's more expensive than the Black Hack. I mean, the Black Hack, one of its defining features is how cheap it is. So I wasn't really sure whether I wanted to spend money on it, since on balance I quite like the Black Hack. I also tend to like things that are called black better than things that are called white, because I'm a bit of an edgelord. Until I get it, all I really know about it, I know from Ben Milton's review on Questing Beast. I am intrigued by the way that the White Hack apparently works with classes, and that they're fewer and more vaguely defined, and then you choose different things to customize them. I find I'm really leaning towards that approach to character class more and more, that what a small number of basic frameworks that you can customize, I'm finding a lot better. I think that works better for me, both running the game and it also inspires my imagination more as a player. Like, instead of thinking, well, here's a list of classes I can play, it's sort of like, well, what character do I want to play and what role do I want to fulfill in the game, and then pick the tools that you need to build it. So for instance, like I really like how James Spawn reduced it to two classes for Untold Adventures. And I actually really like how Knave reduces it just to one class. Like, everybody starts off as the same thing, and what you choose to take with you when you create your character is how your character distinguishes itself from the other PCs. And you could use those tools to build a traditional fighter or a traditional magic user or a traditional cleric if you want to. But you don't have to. You can mix and match. It's kind of expected that you will customize your character. So it would be interesting to see how White Hack does that. And like I said, I've ordered it because it was missing from my collection. I went ahead and I ordered the cheapest print copy, because I don't think I need another notebook to keep my game notes in. I have quite a few of those already. I'll probably talk more about that when it arrives. In the meantime, I also found this other voicemail from Colin that I haven't published yet. So th I'm going to publish this one right now, but it actually arrived before his voicemail about the White Hack.
So, great episode, Robert. Really enjoyed it. Listened to it as soon as it landed on my phone. This is my second attempt at recording. The kids on the show, I think it's a great idea. I'm trying to get my youngest to get involved and perhaps have something to say to the anchorites. I'd love to hear from your little girl. And Eric's led the way on that one, and fair play to him. Hopefully, be having a chat with him tomorrow. So listen out for that one. The skill checks, totally agree with you. I've really liked this idea of the roll under with multiple D6. However, I don't think I've had any experience of that at the table, so that is interesting. So much other stuff. In fact, to be fair, I'm gonna have to listen to the episode again, and that's no mean feat. Oh, that was an hour long, bro. But an hour of goodness that sped by. Good man.
So yeah, I talked to my daughter about that, and she said that she would definitely be up for it. So we just need to find some time to do it. I want to actually get the do it while I have my computer on, so I can get her sandbox area that she designed using Hexographer. I showed her how Hexographer worked, and she just went to work and built a little sandbox area, and she showed me where all the adventure sites are and what kind of adventures are going to be there and stuff, because it's actually her intention to run this as a game someday for her cousins. So I'd like her to talk about that, although I think she also wants to talk about kids on bikes. In the meantime, we went ahead and played My Little Pony Tales of Equestria at the weekend. On Friday. Our gaming has been a bit slow since school started. I know, like, we're into November, so school's been back for a while, but it has been quite a big adjustment, especially for my my youngest, who's just starting primary school. And I've mentioned that before, but, you know, it's quite a mental drain on especially quite young kids to start full time school, and a lot of times he's just not had the mental energy to cope with something like a role-playing game. He's just needed to do simpler, you know, things, just a lot of solo imaginative play and things like that. So and I haven't wanted to push it because, you know, it is a big imaginative and mental commitment to sit down and play a role-playing game. And I know he's been really tired, and he's got a lot on his mind from school. He's learning a lot. He's, you know, with a lot more kids, so he's got a lot of social stuff going on and things. So I've just wanted to just, like, leave it, and it's like, well, he'll get to it again or he won't. But, you know, you can never really force people to play a role-playing game. They have to be into it. But I was looking through my emails on my phone, and I got an email from Riverhorse, who published Tales of Equestria, and they were advertising a new adventure module called The Haunting of Equestria, which, according to the blurb, involves a kind of an alternate universe version of Nightmare Moon returning to Equestria on Nightmare Night, and so it's not Princess Luna lapsing back into being Nightmare Moon, but on the other hand, you get to use Nightmare Moon. My son saw the picture on my phone because it showed the front cover, and he's like, "Ooh, what's that?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's The Haunting of Equestria." And I read him the blurb and things. He's like, "Well, we'll play that on Friday." And it's like, "Well, okay, first of all, I probably can't order it in time. First of all, it's pre-order anyway, so it's not even available yet. But even if it were available, it probably wouldn't arrive by Friday." And then the other thing that I didn't say was that I haven't been super impressed by the module design. I talked about the railroadiness of the one that comes with the core rule books. The follow-up to that, which I got because I wanted the Game Master screen, Curse of the Statuettes, was better and less railroady, but the design itself left something to be desired. Basically, I'm sure everybody who writes an adventure module believes that the Game Master running that module has to read all your material front to back in order to run it properly. On the other hand, you have to understand that a lot of people won't do that, or when they're at the table with the players will do something unexpected, and there will be some quick page flipping and skimming. So your material always needs to be skimmable, and Curse of the Statuettes was not skimmable. So whenever they did something that I had to improvise around, I could never flip to a page, glance down, and remind myself what the content was. It would involve me sitting down and reading a lot of text and pausing the game. And that's just bad design for any RPG. When you're at the table running the game, the Game Master's attention and focus needs to be on the players, not on a lot of text that the players aren't seeing. Maybe they've sorted that out. Maybe they're better at, you know, this is really not so much in the adventure design, but in the layout. And, you know, I could be spoiled because so many OSR modules have been really doing a lot of great innovations in layout so that you could run really quite complex adventures with the least amount of effort. So maybe I'm just being a bit, maybe I'm just spoiled because of what I'm becoming more and more used to. But I feel like even your bog standard Wizards of the Coast D&D adventure module is a lot more skimmable than what they were producing for Tales of Equestria. So I'm not really gonna buy these things if I can't use them, and I would rather make up my own stuff. I'm getting more into that and into letting the players, i.e. my kids, decide what they want to do and where they want to go. So I decided I would improvise this. It's like, well, if that's the premise, I could probably improvise something along those lines. And it might even be better because it will be the way I think it should work or the way it needs to work at the table. We had a small hitch in that my older child, my daughter, really wanted to follow up on where Curse of the Statuettes ended up. So the Haunting of Equestria, theoretically, would take place largely in Ponyville and in some of the more established areas of Equestria. But at the end of Curse of the Statuettes, the ponies had discovered a door to a heretofore secret underground kingdom of ponies called Umberfoal. And so my oldest would want to explore Umberfoal, and my youngest wants to do the Haunting of Equestria, so I had to think of a way to combine them. So I thought, well, what we know about Umberfoal is that during the reign of Discord, they sealed themselves up and turned themselves into statuettes of themselves in order to prevent them being tormented by Discord. And then they were supposed to wake up and come out when Discord was defeated, but they didn't. The magic didn't quite work out. We also know that the seal, the magic seal they placed on their door was starting to come away, which is what attracted the principal villain of the adventure, Moonbeam, to the area, and how she learned to turn other ponies into statuettes. And now that magic door has been completely opened, and there's a lot of very old but apparently not quite functioning as it should magic going on. So I decided that the first thing they'll have to do is they'll have to find the city of Umberfoal. It's not going to just be on the other side of the door. So we'll do some cave crawling and stuff like that. Then when they find the people of Umberfoal, they'll still be statuettes, and they'll have to wake them up. Then the people of Umberfoal won't believe that Discord has been defeated, because to them it's probably just felt like a moment in time, like they went to sleep and they woke up, and you know, they won't understand that thousands of years literally have passed. So they'll want to go to a magical thing that they have, basically like a very still underground lake that is magically enchanted to be able to show you the past, the future, the present, whatever you ask. But it doesn't work the way it used to work. And instead it shows an alternate universe, Equestria, where Nightmare Moon was never defeated. And Nightmare Moon comes through the portal and out into this world. So that was my plan for the episode, or my plan for the session. But when we started playing it, as they were getting set up, my oldest changed her mind and said, well, actually, the first thing we should do is go back to Equestria and tell Princess Celestia and Princess Luna what we found, because she kind of realized that this was a very important and an unusual thing, and that, you know, people need to be notified. So they went back to Equestria. Now, this turned out to work a lot better, because I feel like if I were going to run it the way that I was initially planning, there would probably be a good possibility that alternate universe Nightmare Moon would never escape, because as soon as they realized what was happening, the kids would want to do something to stop it. And I'm not the kind of game master that says, well, this is the way I wanted the adventure to go, so you fail. Like, I would definitely have given them a chance to propose something to break the connection of the portal, or turn it off, or something like that. You know, so I felt like there was probably a good chance that Nightmare Moon would never even actually escape as soon as they realized what was going on. But now they're heading back to Ponyville. So when they get back to Ponyville, I tell them that, oh, it's the day before Nightmare Night and everybody's busy making preparations. So they got really into that, because Nightmare Night is the Equestria version of Halloween. And on Nightmare Night, ponies dress up as scary things, and they remember the eternal night that Nightmare Moon had once brought, and they pretend to be afraid of Nightmare Moon, and Princess Luna pretends to be Nightmare Moon, but it's all in fun, just like as a real Halloween. You pretend to be scary, but it's all for fun. So they got really into that, and they started making plans for a massive Nightmare Night party, and they started designing a lot of party games just out of their own imagination. And I basically encouraged them to give me as much detail as they possibly could, and they eventually made this list of Nightmare Night party games, because what I was thinking is like, well, at some point the alternate universe Nightmare Moon will come and strike, and they will have to engage with her, but she's way too powerful for a couple of little ponies to take on. So what I was thinking is, if there's a lot of weird games and party favors and things like that, these are things that they can start using to distract her or confuse her or something like that. So I basically encouraged them to be as creative as they possibly could and to give me as much detail as they possibly could. Like I said, they wrote an entire list of all the party games. Unfortunately, this part took so long that my son was really into it, but then by the time they'd finished the list, he was kind of done, and he kind of burned out, so he didn't participate as much in the actual conflict bits. He came back at the end when it was time to level up, because he loves leveling up, and he chose his new talents and things like that. But what happened after the party started is, the first thing is they noticed that Princess Luna hasn't shown up, and it's starting to get a bit late. And when Princess Luna does show up, she's not doing her whole, oh, I'm pretending to be Nightmare Moon. She seems troubled and worried. And so they ask what's wrong, and she's like, well, we sense some kind of magical disturbance coming from... And as soon as I said magical disturbance, my daughter started going, oh, it's Umberful, I knew it. Which is kind of what her pony character would do as well. It wasn't really good role-playing. She's like that in real life. But since her pony character is also like that, it fit really nicely. Eventually the details they got is that they feel that there's some kind of energy, some kind of bond between this world and another world, maybe a world of the past or a world of a different version of the past or something. And that's when they kind of realized that they got so distracted with Nightmare Night parties that nobody actually went and told Princess Luna and Princess Celestia about how they found a sealed magic door to another kingdom. But by then, the alternate universe Nightmare Moon attacks. And the way I set it up is some other little ponies come screaming, and then they run up to Princess Luna and they say, oh, you did a really great job being Nightmare Moon this time. And she's like, I haven't been pretending to be Nightmare Moon. I've been too busy. And then they know something's wrong. And then the alternate universe Nightmare Moon attacks. And so the party game thing ran really well. See, at first, my daughter's solution was, well, the main six need to get the Elements of Harmony, because that's how you defeat Nightmare Moon. It's like, well, here's the problem. They don't carry the Elements of Harmony around on them. They're stowed back at Twilight's house. So they need to get there, but Nightmare Moon flies faster than any of the ponies other than Rainbow Dash, and Fluttershy isn't even there, because Fluttershy hides under her bed during Nightmare Night. So Rainbow Dash needed to go get Fluttershy, and nobody else was strong or fast enough to outrun Nightmare Moon. So that's when the distracting her started. So they basically picked a fight with her and then ran into where the party was being done. And then one of the party games was they built all these boxes like coffins, and then you would teleport into one of the coffins and then try to teleport into a random one, and people would have to pick the right one. And it was basically like find the pony in the box. So she did that for a bit. That one ended up being a success, although it was risky because my daughter's character only has a D4 for teleport and Nightmare Moon has a D12 for teleport, and they're rolling against each other. Mm-hmm. So Nightmare Moon rolled a 1. So, and then my daughter rolled a 3. So it worked out, but I did let her know that she got pretty lucky with that, and that she might want to switch to a different skill. So it turns out their telekinesis skills were pretty much matched. They both had D12s for telekinesis. So she started doing a lot of things like the apples for the apple bobbing and stuff like that. She actually ended up taking some stamina points off Nightmare Moon, because Nightmare Moon failed her body test to resist the apples being flung at her. But I said, well, there's 6 of the main 6, and they each need to retrieve their elements of harmony. So you need to distract her 6 times. So there were 6 basically 6 challenges, all to do with the games that she had invented. And she would look at the game and she would tell me how she was now using the game as a way to distract Nightmare Moon. And she failed once, but she gave back. She burned a lot of tokens of friendship to make sure that she didn't have any disastrous fails. But I felt like that was quite good, because it was, you know, she's got all these little tokens on her in front of her, these little fake jewels that are the tokens of friendship. And when you give them back, you can either re-roll, or if you give back enough at a time, you can just say that you automatically succeed and narrate how you succeed. But she's got a limited supply of them, and she was running low on them and stuff, and it really added to the drama. So it was actually a pretty good mechanic, because she's got a limited cache of get out of jail free cards basically, and she was burning through them because it was such a it made the opponent feel very difficult, and she was really buying into it. So in the end, she did manage to distract her for long enough for the main 6 to come back, and they had their elements of harmony, and they, you know, did the thing that they did in the very first episode of My Little Pony to defeat Nightmare Moon. And the energy from the elements of harmony hit the alternate universe Nightmare Moon, bounced back, and stunned all the main 6, and they all fall to the ground unconscious, because she's an alternate universe Nightmare Moon. She needs the alternate universe elements of harmony. And as soon as that came out, my daughter realized that they needed to go back to Umberfull. So I'm going to get to run that whole, you know, running, like going through the caves and finding the ponies and stuff, and using the glass pool and stuff. That'll just be a little bit different. It actually is better in this order. But we ended the session there because we've been playing for quite a while and stuff. And then I said, you know, since you actually took on Nightmare Moon and you're still here, you definitely deserve to level up. Because I thought about leveling them up at the end of the last adventure, but I didn't. And then I didn't level them up at the start of this one, because I didn't want to put a lot of bookkeeping, especially since we hadn't played any games in a while, and it's like I don't want to like start our first RPG session in months with a lot of bookkeeping. But I said, yeah, you definitely deserve to level up. One thing I have noticed, they've now reached level 4, and my daughter has a D20, which is the highest you can get, in her main talent now. And she's got D12s and D10s and some of the other ones. She still has some pretty low ones, like her teleport. She used it, so she got to upgrade it to a D6. So that's still pretty low, but it strikes me that you don't have to level up too much before you get some pretty high dice in at least in your main talents, because when you level up, any talent you used in the previous adventure gets upgraded, and then you can choose to upgrade one that you didn't use. So yeah, it feels like the talent dice get upgraded pretty quickly. Her trait dice, so her body, mind, and charm, she's still sitting on D8s, because you only get to upgrade one of those every time you level up. So I only mentioned it because they're level 4. She's got a D20 in telekinesis now, because she already had a D12 and she used it a lot. And I was just thinking, well, that's pretty high. And the game assumes that level 10 is like the highest level, and that when you reach level 10, you do one big epic adventure and then you retire. It'll probably take them quite a few more levels to level up all 3 of their physical and mental traits two D20s, but it's just something that I've noticed that, like, yeah, they're the thing that they do most, which is use one of their special powers. That reached max. She maxed out on that at level 4. So I don't know. We'll see about how that works. I mean, you can still roll a 1 on a 20, so it's not a big deal. To make this possible, I had to get some extra material. And I said, like, I definitely didn't want to get any more of the adventure modules. I want to just start winging it and, you know, designing little scenarios and then seeing how they interact with them and then responding to what they do. But I did need more creatures. So I got the bestiary of Equestria. And I also got the source book. It's basically like a setting information. It incorporates things from the My Little Pony movie, so that you can use some of those settings as settings for the role-playing game now. So I'd just like to have a quick look at those two things first. I'm going to do the setting one first because it's the one that I was slightly disappointed in. I'll do the slightly negative one first and then end on a high note. So I recorded that entire episode pretty much early in the morning before I had my morning coffee. So I can't believe I managed that, and that's probably why it sounds so disjointed and stuff like that. In between recording that segment, I got a cold and I took some time off, and then I actually recorded the interview with my daughter, and we discussed the My Little Pony supplement books during that interview. So I think, to be honest, I'm going to save that for the next episode, which will be the interview with DM Dad's daughter. So I hope you're all ready for that. In the meantime, play well and let the dice fall where they may.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.